Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Mount Rushmore. Gary, you've had a little bit of time off from chiseling away, so it's about time we put you back to work.
Well, I've bought myself a brand new set of tools, actually, mate. I've took the opportunity of throwing the old ones in the bin because they've been pretty well worn out by the chiseling I've done. So I've got a brand new set ready to roll. So the work on the figures, the faces of the new Mount Rushmore are going to be absolute spot on.
Excellent. And obviously, I don't want to be disrespectful to the club, I really don't, but it could maybe do with a little bit of something new around the ground, maybe. Maybe four faces is exactly what they're after.
Perhaps.
Stephen, how are you?
All well, Stu.
Looking forward to this one a little bit. I want to say a little bit left field, but there will be reasons for it.
Massively looking forward to this one. You know, as a Liverpool fan, Wrexham fall under that thumbprint almost. I class it as being the Liverpool Echo thumbprint. So if you know, as a kid, you know, scouring the sports and the football pages in particular, you know, the Saturday Pink and stuff like that, you know, all of kind of like the all those. So you know, you had Liverpool, you had Everton, Tranmere, but then it would stretch to the boundaries, and it would be Southport to the north, and as far as Wrexham to the south, really. So, you know, Wrexham have always been on my radar in a way. So I'm massively looking forward to this one tonight.
Excellent. I suppose, Gary, just before we get to our guest, who is sat incredibly patiently in the bottom right-hand corner, I've got to say. But when you came up with the idea, Gary, I'm going to say, arguably, Wrexham probably wasn't one that you thought would pop up.
No, not really. But it's the ideal thing, really, because it's not you know, your best Barcelona players, the best Bayern Munich players, the best Liverpool players. It's the players that mean something to each guest that we've had on here. And you know, this one particularly, and the next one to close out the series, are two less celebrated clubs. But that doesn't make the choices of the guests any less worthy. You know, it's a personal thing. You know, so it's not hero worship, but the players you respect and you think have, you know, served your club really well should be honoured, and, you know, status of the club is irrelevant.
Brilliant. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like you say, I think the more the passion will still be right there once this discussion gets underway, regardless of the club. So, special guest, bottom right-hand corner, senior writer with These Football Times, Mr. James Kelly. James, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Obviously, the very first question then is why, without being disrespectful again, why Wrexham?
Well, I mean, that's quite simple. I am from Wrexham and I'm a Wrexham fan. So, I mean, it's kind of the logical choice, I guess.
Okay. In terms of the club then, obviously, did you decide that you would like to be on Wrexham? I like to ask this question. I mean, when you were picking your players, and we'll come to criteria in a second, as to why, you know, or what criteria you used to pick the players. But did you keep the choices to yourself, or did you discuss them with anybody else?
I mean, I discussed a few of them with particularly. I mean, I'll get into it more as we go through them. But there were one or two that I kind of was a bit more. I was a bit less sure of, but yeah, a few of them I was pretty certain from the outset when I kind of got emailed the criteria. I was thinking, you know, it has to be this player for this position, or, you know, this player for that position. So it's there's two that I feel like they're very easy to pick, and then I think the other two are slightly more contentious, which I guess is what you want.
Oh, we love it. We love that on here. Don't worry about that. Okay, before we get to your criteria, then, Gary, for you, Wrexham as a club, what do they mean to you? What's your sort of overriding memories, I guess, thoughts about Wrexham as a football club?
I guess they've been in a slump for the sort of last couple of decades, but you know, there was a time when Wrexham were very much the sort of side that you never wanted to get drawn against in the cup games. I remember players like Dixie McNeil scoring goals for Wrexham in the big games, in cup games. And, you know, there was, I remember them being a sort of lower league, so third division, fourth division, or in new money, was that sort of League One, League Two sort of era. You know, they were, as I say, they were always a team that could always bring a surprise in a cup game. And I guess, you know, being in sort of North Wales, although they're sort of fairly close to Chester, if you sort of imagine the border around North Wales, the nearest Welsh club to Wrexham is probably Swansea, I would think, Cardiff in the south. So they've got a pretty wide catchment area in the northwest of Wales. So I guess there's plenty. It's one of those clubs where you could see plenty of potential to them, for them to flourish, because obviously the rugby is a big game in Wales, but it tends to get in the south of Wales more as well. So, you know, there's plenty of scope for Wrexham to come back and flourish again.
Just before we come back to James, you know, for you, Stephen, I guess geographically, you know, as you mentioned at the start, you know, sort of, you know, in Liverpool, that area there, and just coming down into Wales, as good as my UK geography is, that's about as far as you're nearer than I am. Let's put it that way. I guess you would sort of have half an eye on the Welsh clubs, especially obviously with them interacting with the English game and the English league.
Yeah, well, Wrexham, it's not all that far from Liverpool, you know, so I'd stretch out I've been to the racecourse many times for kind of like pre-season friendlies with Liverpool. I can remember going, watching Liverpool take on what was then called Total Network Solutions in a Champions League round qualifier, probably about 6 or 7 weeks after going to Istanbul to watch Liverpool win the Champions League. So, you know, Wrexham and the racecourse ground always had a massive soft spot for them. And like I said before, you know, they were within that Liverpool Echo thumbprint that they just always fell in the radar. The result was always there to see, a small match report. So they were just one of those teams that were always on my radar. And within that, loads of links to Liverpool. You know, one huge figure that will come into this that I'll not name, but you know, plenty of others, you know, down the years as well, you know, some just in cameo roles, but you know, like Ian Rush turned out for them, Jimmy Case turned out for them, Alan Kennedy, Phil Borsma. So, you know, these links, it's a similar thing for me with Tranmere Rovers. You know, there's a kind of, for me as a, and it probably sounds really condescending, but as a supporter of a big club, saying that I keep an eye out for these smaller clubs. But, you know, for me, it's the part of the fabric of, you know, the area. And it is, you know, where Merseyside is and North Wales is, they're very, very close to one another. So, you know, they feel like a cousin just over the water almost.
It's worth mentioning, Stu, as well, just seeing what Stevie says about those Liverpool players. Because I was doing some research, obviously, on Wrexham and players who played for them. There's some really famous names who played for Wrexham, and particularly goalkeepers. I mean, when I started with the goalkeepers, I was by shortly, but some really top-class goalkeepers have played for Wrexham.
Well, in a way, one of the great things about this one is, if you think when we've done some of the other episodes and we've said, well, there's a sparsity of candidates for certain positions, particularly goalkeeper. If you think about when we did the Newcastle episode, and you know, and it had to be Shea Given. Yet you look at the contenders for every single position that James will come across here, and he'll cover for us. Is that the contenders for each position? There were multiple, you know, contenders for every single position here, and we're not just talking like the cameo appearance players, you know, because you've got to discount the likes of Ian Rush for this. Because it was, you know, the end of his career, and it was a few games that he turned out for. So, you know, yes, these figures played, but, you know, there are bigger legends, Wrexham legends, that played. And this, I think this is one of the best things about this episode.
Brilliant. I mean, it's a great link in. So James, before we sort of get your first choice, criteria-wise, you know, people have used all sorts of different criteria to sort of justify choices. There is no right or wrong answer to this. It's more just, I suppose, for your sake, really, once the abuse starts coming in as to why you left people out and you didn't leave people out, it's just a way of kind of clearing your name first and getting the excuses in early.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of looked at it from the perspective of, I mean, obviously, I'm only 23, so I've not really seen Wrexham have too many great seasons, unfortunately. But I tried to base it on what I've heard about players in the past, coupled with kind of, you know, a little bit of like looking around at sort of players that were around in kind of like the 60s and 70s that, you know, maybe my dad's told me about, or some of his friends, and people that to me are basically just names and there's no real kind of other association with them. Whereas obviously to maybe older viewers, you know, the fact I've left out certain players might be positively sort of repulsive to them, but hopefully we can kind of get past that, and I'll try and explain why I've not put them in.
Okay, that all seems fair to me. Good luck with that. So first of all, then, first position, as always, you know, is the goal. We're after a goalkeeper, a defender, a midfielder, and a striker. So we always go from back to front. So in terms of the goalkeeper, before you sort of give us your choice, and I suppose you've alluded to it already, really, how difficult was the goalkeeping choice?
I think, to be honest with you, the goalkeeper was probably one of, if not the hardest position, because it's obviously, it's not one of those positions where you associate it with, you know, a certain amount of, you can look at a striker, for example, and say, oh, we scored 20 goals a season for 5 years, he's got to be in there or whatever. Whereas obviously a keeper, you've got to look at it more sort of from a more rounded perspective. So I've based it basically on achievements coupled with a little bit of kind of cult hero sort of status. As I say, from a younger fan's perspective, that's kind of all I've really got to go off, because all the goalkeepers that were there for consideration really have played before I, with the exception of one of them, have played before I really started following Wrexham. So it's more based off what I know rather than what I've seen.
Okay. Have you got any names? Have you got any names that were in close contention?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is probably the most controversial one, is that I could have gone with Di Davis, who was our keeper in the sort of late 70s, early 80s. He was part of the team that won the third division in, I think it was 78. We ended up in what is now the Championship, which is the highest we've ever been, league-wise. I think he got over half a century of caps for Wales. He was, from what I've heard, was a very, very good goalkeeper. But as I say, from my perspective as a younger fan, it's something that, he's probably quite controversial, because, as I say, he was a very, very good goalkeeper for us, from what my dad and other people have told me. But he's not in there. And then another one that was close was Andy Dibble, who we had sort of the early 2000s. He was in goal when I just started first kind of knowing that Wrexham had a football club when I was sort of 7, 8. And he was there really at the end of his career. He was in his late 30s. But he was still influential. Like, we won the league when he was our keeper. He was still a very, very reliable option to have. And I mean, his son, Christian, is actually our reserve keeper now. So it's a slightly strange sort of keeping it in the family a little bit. But yeah, in terms of the goalkeeper, I've gone for Andy Marriott, who we had in the early 90s. We got him, I think we got him from Nottingham Forest. He came through sort of Arsenal's academy. And Brian Flynn at the time, our manager, he signed him for 200,000. And at the time, that was quite a large amount for a goalkeeper. I mean, obviously, when, you know, a couple of years ago, when Liverpool signed Alisson for 65, 70 million or whatever it was, there were a few eyeballs raised. But I mean, it's strange to kind of be debating that on the same level as 200,000 for a keeper. But it was, at the time, it was very much considered a little bit kind of out of the ordinary. But yeah, I mean, he made over 200 appearances for us. He was very influential in the team, and he kind of had a kind of cult status. There's a very famous chant that we have, which starts off with him throwing the ball to a fullback we had called Phil Hardy. And then kind of once we sold him on, and he had a bit of a nomadic career afterwards. I mean, I think probably the most famous moment he had was his debut for Birmingham was against Tottenham, and he kind of threw the ball in front of himself thinking there was nobody there. And then Robbie Keane hid behind him. And then when the ball was on the floor, he came round the back and then sort of nipped in and scored basically an open goal. So unfortunately, that's kind of what he's remembered for kind of in a more broad community. But as I say, from a Wrexham perspective, he's very much renowned as a sort of cult figure. And it's a bit weird, actually, because he came back the final day of the 2006 or 7 season. We played Boston United in the sort of, it was like a kind of winner-takes-all game where at the bottom of League Two, we had to win, really, to stay up. And Boston were kind of fighting relegation as well. And we ended up winning 3-1. And he was the goalkeeper for Boston that day. So it was a little bit of a strange one to see him playing against us for many Wrexham fans, given, as I say, the sort of cult status that he has amongst fans.
I'll come to you first, Gary, and only because you might remember Di Davis better than Stephen and I, is the polite way of putting it. In terms then, Gary, of goalkeepers who've missed out here, James makes some great comments, and clearly, he's sort of steeped in the history and heritage of Wrexham. There's no problem there. And I guess, based on his criteria, we can go with his choice.
Absolutely, and this series is all about. It's about the guest choice, and in fairness, James makes a very good case for Andy Merritt. But yeah, I mean, when we sort of Wrexham came up, the goalkeeper I thought would penned in would be Di Davis. So I remember Di Davis playing in the 70s. I mean, Gordon Bennett, I would be about 20 then, so it's not my childhood. Exceptional goalkeeper. And as James said, 50, 60 caps for Wales. So, outstanding goalkeeper. Although, there was a few other players who sort of perhaps weren't at Wrexham very long. John Ruddy, who was at Norwich, and then his second team backup goalkeeper at Wolves. I think Tom Heaton was at Wrexham for a while. And also Ben Foster.
We've had a few weird ones.
For a team that we're talking about, so the Championship was the highest Wrexham have got, and spent a lot of time in the third and fourth tier. That ain't a bad role call the goalkeepers, kiddo, I tell you.
for you, Stephen, Andy Marriott, I'm not saying you're happy with your choice because it doesn't really matter if you are or not because James has picked it. But in terms of sort of where he could go based on the criteria, that little bit of relevance. And again, I think the other thing it's really important that what you can't get away from is the connect in this series is the connect between player and guest. That kind of has to be there. And that's always going to be so difficult to ignore when someone's trying to pick their favourite players.
Yeah, and James has used the right word in cult. It's the cult hero status, isn't it? It's that connection with a player, which isn't always the best player that's ever played for the club or even in a certain position. But it's just that concept of how they, touch the supporters in a way. It's that link. There's like a knowing link almost. It's that horrible phrase of "he gets it," when people are on about a certain player within a club, but they do, and it's just the rapport that a player has between, himself and the supporters, and it's the enjoyment of playing for the football club that you love, and supporters will pick up on that. Andy Marriott was a fine goalkeeper, played for Nottingham Forest very early in his career in a League Cup final against Manchester United, way that Brian Clough could be utterly eccentric, rather than go for the more experienced Mark Crossley, who played in an FA Cup final the previous year. I think there was a contract dispute or something, and Clough being Clough, he said, "All right, well, you're not playing. I'll bring in Andy Marriott instead," having played very few first-team games for Nottingham Forest at the time. So, he was a goalkeeper that was clearly very talented. You don't go onto Arsenal's books at any point in the history of that club without having something about you. So clearly a very talented goalkeeper and served Wrexham really well. But it's the perfect pick, really. But going back to, the list of contenders, Di Davis. I do remember Di Davis as the Swansea's goalkeeper. I know he played for Everton, but I don't remember him playing for Everton. It's just before my time. But I remember him being Swansea's goalkeeper under John Toshack when they rose to the first division in the early 80s, same time as they had Bob Latchford up front and Di Davis in goal. So they had a huge amount of Liverpool and Everton connections at the Vetchfield at the time. So I do remember him and remember how good of a goalkeeper he was. But there's a couple of other names as well. Eddie Nijewski, who went on to play for Chelsea so well, and Mike Hooper, who Liverpool picked up, and you know, for a second choice goalkeeper, played a surprising amount of number of games for Liverpool, really. So you know, there were plenty of other choices in this position, but you know, James has picked very, very well in Andy Marius.
I'm quite interested. Did you say your dad's a Wrexham fan as well?
No. My dad's actually a Man United fan, but he followed Wrexham when he was so younger. So yeah, he's aware of. I mean, he's lived in Wrexham all his life. He knows players. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I was just because I was quite interested. I mean, if he's not a Wrexham fan, I suppose it won't be quite that best interest. But I just wondered what his opinions were on each of your choices. That was all. But that's fine. No worries. Okay. So from goalkeeper, then now bizarrely, considering I'm like I say quite a shallow person and all about the flair players, this is actually the position that always interests me the most when people have been on this, and that's your defender again. You know, obviously, you know, you've got your pick, you know, you've got your choice. But in terms of defenders who came close to getting in, which ones nearly made it? And was this a difficult choice?
I mean, it was, but then it also wasn't. I mean, if you're picking defenders without the defender that I picked, it makes it quite difficult, because in terms of what I've known following Wrexham, we had Brian Carey, who was a very, very dependable Irish centre-back, and then also Dennis Lawrence, who was this giant, I think he was about 6'7", 6'8", this defender that we picked up from a team in Trinidad, and he went on to play over 200 games for us. He was an extremely dependable defender. He actually came back to the race course. I think it was last year. Wales played Trinidad at the race course in a friendly, and he's now Trinidad's manager. There was a few rumours as well he was going to become our new manager, but that hasn't materialised as of yet. So I could have picked Brian Kerr. I could have picked, as I say, Dennis Lawrence. But in the end, it came down to I couldn't really pick anyone besides Joey Jones, which I'm sure Stephen will have something to say on this. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he's well known amongst Wrexham fans. I mean, he had three spells with us, and he's just really kind of, the way that he played was almost like there was a fan on the pitch, like his passion for the game. And he was well known for sort of, at the end of the game, his sort of fist clenching that he did, his sort of celebration. And yeah, he was just very part of a very, very good team for us. I mean, when we reached the FA Cup quarterfinals in sort of 74, which was actually weirdly, we played Burnley at Turf Moor, and that was actually the game that was the incident that my dad decided as a 13-year-old that he needed glasses because he couldn't see the ball. So that was quite an influential sort of game in my family's life. But yeah, he was part of that game, which we ultimately lost. He won the Welsh Cup the following year, and then he went on to play for Liverpool, and then he came back to us. Then he went to Chelsea. Then he came back again. And yeah, he just really, as a Wrexham sort of, if you had to pick one iconic Wrexham player, I'd probably say, of all the people you could pick, Joey Jones is probably the player, to be honest with you. He has such a resonance amongst fans, even to this day. I mean, as I say, I'm obviously quite young and I never saw him play. But, you know, from when I was very, very young, I've always known who Joey Jones was and what he meant to Wrexham as a club.
I'll come to Stephen first, actually, on this one. But just before I do, I'm quite interested there, James. Because obviously, you know, they say, you know, players should never go back. You know, and he's gone back three times. In any way, do you think that's enhanced his reputation, or is it slightly diminished on any of those returns to the club?
I don't think it's diminished at all. I mean, as I say, he went to Liverpool, and as I'm sure Stephen will tell us, did reasonably well there. He came back and again was just him, and he was just a great player for us. And then when he came back, I think the end of his career, he was sort of late 30s, but I'm sure we'll get onto it. He was part of the team when we beat Arsenal in the FA Cup in 1992. Even then, as I say, someone who was in his late 30s and really, you could argue, was almost past it, but he was still, you know, still there for the club. And then afterwards, he kind of came into the club as a youth coach and reserve coach. I think he was even caretaker for a brief while as well. So he really is someone that's just ingrained in the fabric of the club, to be honest with you.
That's great. Stephen, I suppose we'll start with you then, I guess. Joey Jones, your first of all, your Wrexham opinion. Then we'll have your Liverpool opinion as well.
Oh, well, he is Wrexham, is Joey. You know, like James said, you know, to star for them in three, you know, separate occasions and what would be probably a good 20 years of a span from start to end in that. You know, as a rampaging fullback at left back. And then later on, when that third spell he had at the club, he eventually switched to centre back because, you know, he didn't have the legs to run up and down the left anymore. And, yeah, the less running that he had to do at centre back, the better. But, you know, his reading of the game. And he matured as a player as well. You know, at Liverpool, he was this, you know, enthusiastic, and like to say, James said about the fist pumping and the clenched fists, and you know, he'd fight for every ball. Wasn't the most technically gifted footballer in the world, but there were very few that were as full blooded and enthusiastic, would fight for the cause, and that was the great thing about it, that he was just incessant in everything he did. You know, one of the wonderful stories about him at Liverpool was that when Liverpool went to Barcelona to the Camp Nou for the UEFA Cup semi-final 76 in the first leg, and Liverpool won 2-1, and the Barcelona supporters had these cushions, these round and square cushions that they were sitting on, and they were skimming them onto the track and trying to, you know, skim them onto the pitch, and it was all the white handkerchiefs and all that kind of stuff. And Joey Jones is on the bench that night, and he's thinking that they're throwing the cushions at the Liverpool bench. So he's picking the cushions up and skimming them back into the crowd. No, skimming them off the heads of supporters and stuff like that. And Bob Paisley has to drag him down and say, "You're going to cause a riot here. They're not throwing them at us, they're throwing them at their own players." But he was just, you know, a wonderful personality, Joey Jones. Every story you ever hear about him is just an incredible one. And for Wrexham, he was just an absolute icon, you know, to play in so many kind of different peaks and troughs of the history as well. You know, when Wrexham beat Arsenal in that FA Cup game, they were down near the foot of the Football League. But he was there during the highs of like Division 2 and some of those epic runs in the Cups, you know, through the 70s and the early 80s. And he was, he, you know, if anyone ever mentions Wrexham Football Club to me, my immediate recall, the very first thing I think of is Joey Jones.
There you go, Gary. I was just about to get sort of your perspective, but I've got kind of two questions for you, Gary. So the first question is, as I mentioned to James, you know, I sort of asked him about, you know, whether it enhanced or diminished his reputation. But my first question is, I guess it, in theory, then it must take a really special player who's created an incredibly strong bond based on the notorious fickle nature of football fans. But to be able to leave essentially twice and still go back and still be accepted as a son of Wrexham Football Club, I guess, you know, it takes a special player to do that.
Absolutely does. And I think it's how you conduct yourself when you're playing for the club. You know, and some players leave clubs and fans resent them because there's the way they leave. Other in other circumstances, players retain that respect. And I think Joey Jones was very much the latter. And when he moved to Liverpool, who could blame him? You know, I mean, Wrexham fans aren't that naive. But, you know, the fact that he went back and then went back again afterwards and, you know, retained the passion, and it's, you know, how James described, and Stevie as well, when he's playing for Liverpool, this is an ironclad, certain 100% choice for a Mount Rushmore guy. You know, I can't tell, I remember Joey Jones playing for Wrexham, I remember him playing for Liverpool, but the way James describes him, you know, this is, a true heart, a true Wrexham fan as well as player, and fully worthy of his place on the on Mount Rushmore. What's the second question, Stu?
My second question, then, and this is more an observation. Again, it's come from comment, and it's when we've been doing this, and people have sort of been chatting about, you know, legacy and relationship and stuff, and it's very rare. And while James was chatting, I was trying to think of some. It's very rare that we've had someone who's been at the club as a player, and, you know, and this is why we're picking them, because the players, but have then gone on into a backroom position and almost enhance that reputation even further. And the only one I could think of was Billy McNeil when we did the Celtic episode. But the transition into backroom staff or management doesn't seem to, and I know it's about the position they play, but it, you know, we look at criteria, you know, criteria could be what they went on to do for the club afterwards, but that it never really seems to come up.
Yeah, that's true, actually. It's a good point. And when you were saying that, was Morant was racing back, and the one I could come up with was Billy McNeil as well. I think he probably is the only one. I mean, some of the other ones, like perhaps Brian LeBowden might have gone into coaching at Everton for a while or something. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, it's strange, you know. And you almost want to say Jerry Jones is a one club man. And that sounds stupid because he's not. But you see where his heart is all the time. And even when he was at Anfield playing for Liverpool, I'm sure that passion for Wrexham was still there. Not that it was diminished his ability and desire to play for Liverpool. But I think, and to continue contributing to the cause after your playing days can only enhance the situation. And, it's almost like, and Stevie mentioned a while ago about Bob Paisley, and it whipped the streets outside Anfield if he was asked to help Liverpool. And Joey Jones obviously has a similar sort of thing. He's done caretaker, he's done coaching, he's been with the academy and that sort of thing. So, it's stupid to say he's a one club man, but the one club is still in his heart all the time, I think.
I think just to add to that, the big telling thing for me with Joey Jones and a huge amount of respect for it as well, is that when he left Liverpool, he came to Liverpool, he won a couple of league titles, the UEFA Cup, he played in the 1977 European Cup final, he won another winner's medal from the bench a year later at Wembley. So, he come to Anfield, he won a significant amount of medals. But then when it came to leaving, the early exchanges of 78, 79, there would have been many other options available for him. He could have held out for kind of like a switch to another first division club. He'd have walked into many first division teams, on the back of leaving Liverpool, but he went back to Wrexham instead. He would have done. He would have walked into, 16, maybe more, 16, 17, 18 of the first division sides, the other first division sides when he left Liverpool.
It's interesting as well, we mentioned about Andy Murray as well. Jansen about Andy Murray. And, we listed another half a dozen or so goalkeepers who could arguably be said to be better goalkeepers. But the other players I've got in the defenders for Wrexham, someone like Neil Taylor, Frank Sinclair was there for a while as well, aren't as good, weren't as good as Joey Jones. So not only had he got that that passion, that commitment to the club, he was a decent, damn well player as well.
We'll come on to your midfielder, James. Now, this is exactly where when we talk about the type of player that I love, this one sits right in the sweet spot of everything that I love about footballers. So we're moving up the pitch into the midfield. Again, how difficult was this choice, and who sort of ran them close?
I mean, this was talking about the kind of the cult status of a player that, Steve was saying about, like, there wasn't really anyone that ran this player close. If you're looking statistically, like, we had a midfielder in the sort of, basically in the 60s and 70s called Arthur Griffiths, who later went on to manage us, who I think my mum's told me lives around the corner from me. I've never actually seen him. So I don't know if she's just sort of lying to me, but he was.
Don't lie. Moms don't lie.
Well, I mean, hopefully she won't watch this. Otherwise, I might not be allowed back in my house. But he played over 500 odd games for us, and as I say, he was there for two decades. I mean, barring when he went to Arsenal for a season, he was pretty much Wrexham through and through. But comparing him to who I've picked, which is Mickey Thomas, there wasn't really any debate, purely because if you're talking to someone, the way I kind of base this, I mean, this is sort of, I'm not sure if it's a bit hypocritical, I didn't say it at the start, but I kind of looked at it as well, of if I was speaking to someone about Wrexham, which I'm not going to lie, I do quite a lot, the players that come up are always the same in terms of who people have heard of. And in terms of, alongside Joey Jones, you have Mickey Thomas, who ultimately obviously went on to play for Man United. He went on to play for Chelsea as well. But just in terms of a personality as well, you know, we're talking about someone who, he came into the team in the early 70s and, you know, I mentioned that quarterfinal in the FA Cup with Burnley. He was there for that. Also, I think it was 75, 76, Cup Winners' Cup quarterfinal. We lost to Anderlecht, who went on to win it. He was in the team then as well. But then you're talking there about the mid-70s and then also he comes back to Wrexham in 91 as a 37-year-old and then goes on to score undoubtedly the most iconic goal in our history, which is the equaliser in that FA Cup win against Arsenal when, you know, Alan Smith's made it 1-0 in the first half to what were then the league holders. And it looked very comfortable. And then, you know, late in the second half, we get this free kick sort of 25 yards out. Mickey Thomas hits a free kick. You know, you couldn't find a better free kick if you tried. Obviously, I'm slightly biased, but it's just a brilliant hit. And then a few minutes later, Steve Watkin gets the winner. But I think, as I say, I have picked it based on not just on that goal, but when you consider everything else Mickey Thomas did for us as a club, I just thought that there's not really anyone else that you can choose for the midfield position, to be honest with you.
I'll come to you on this one, Gary. And I suppose Mickey Thomas, and there's a series on, I think it was on Netflix, and it's just called The Mavericks. And there's a lot of players from the 70s, you know, who have that maverick, that cult status, that almost, they are footballers and they're incredibly talented footballers, but they don't live the life of footballers as we know it, certainly not today, but that almost makes them even more cult characters and cult figures. And to me, you know, Mickey Thomas sits right in that sort of category.
But he just, how to phrase this? He had an interesting interesting issues off the pitch, shall we say, financially and non-financially. But one of the best memories I have of Mickey Thomas is, I think it was a match of the day, the open sequence is a match of the day, and he was playing for Man United at the time, and I think he's fouled, or perhaps he'd won a free kick and he wasn't fouled, I can't remember. But he turns to the camera and winks at the camera. And it's just sort of, that's the sort of attitude he played with. He was a bit cheeky, he was a bit sort of off the cuff, and Maverick's a great way of describing him, Stu. I remember him playing for Chelsea. I really loved him playing for Chelsea because he was always going to give you something to smile about. He was always going to get you on the edge of your chair as well. So I absolutely understand why Jans has picked Mickey Thomas. Absolutely.
Again, this is no disrespect to anybody who's watching this or listening, and you know it's not meant to be disrespectful, but players like that at lower league and lower level clubs they're almost worth more than a promotion or you know something else. That to have a character like that at your club week in week out almost compensates for because they're allowed such license. You know, if it's like Gary said, it was at Chelsea, but you know it wasn't the Chelsea that we know now, you know, and these sort of maverick players almost thrived on the fact that they were the main man at the club and were allowed to live the life that they lived because of what they produced on the pitch. And it's almost like they needed to be at a slightly smaller club in order to thrive. The best sort of modern example I can think of is Lee Trundle. He always struck me as a sort of contemporary version of that type of player.
It's like the Georgie Hadji effect, doesn't it? Put them into a huge, huge pool with a load of world-class players and, you know, they don't do quite so well. You know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, he thrived at Galatasaray. He was wonderful in a Brescia shirt, but never quite felt comfortable, you know, at Real Madrid or a Barcelona. And Mickey Thomas, there was a lot of that in Mickey Thomas. You know, he went to Manchester United, he went to Everton, and they were relatively short-lived experiences. You know, he did well for them, he played well for them, but, you know, there's almost like a restlessness of play. And for Mickey Thomas, I don't think he ever seemed truly at home anywhere other than in a Wrexham shirt or a Wales shirt. You know, he just had that aura about him that, yeah, you know, it is exactly that. It's that. That concept of the home comforts almost.
Now just to chuck in an honourable mention for Brian Flynn as well, who another Wrexham legend who, before James's time, I know, But, you know, played for Wrexham for such a long time, was manager as well. And one of those other, another one of those players who seemed to have been at the club for forever and a day.
How do you think about that, James? Yeah, like I say, in terms of the sort of the cult heroes, like I say, you know, Mickey Thomas was the only choice. But I guess, you know, somebody like your dad must have had some sort of opinion on the inclusion of Mickey Thomas.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I say, he's a United fan, so for me to put Mickey Thomas in here, he's got no problems with that. I mean, I think, you know, Gary mentions Brian Flynn. I mean, if I had to pick a manager to go alongside these four players that I've chosen, there's no debate that it would be Brian Flynn. You know, as a man, just not, you can't really say as a player with Wrexham, just in general, he's just such a renowned figure around the club. I mean, obviously midfield, there's many players I could have chucked in there. I mean, more recently, the likes of Chris Llewellyn or sort of Darren Ferguson from my time. But like you say, going back, you know, the likes of Brian Flynn and obviously I mentioned Arfon Griffiths. But, you know, this isn't just sort of a Mount Rushmore based on cult heroes. But I just think what Mickey Thomas contributed to Wrexham, and as I say, that goal in particular against Arsenal, I think, you know, when I was at uni in Exeter, I was getting a taxi to the station one time to go in for Christmas. And, you know, I was talking to the taxi driver about where I was going, and he didn't know anything about Wrexham other than the fact that, in his words, it's quite demeaning. He said, we used to be rather good, which I dispute. I mean, I think we're still all right. Even though we lost 4-0 to Solihull in the FA Cup at the weekend, we don't talk about that. But no, he was saying, you know, I remember them beating Arsenal in the FA Cup, and that is, as a club, I mean, I don't want to reduce us down to one FA Cup upset, but that is, to the broader football community, what one of the main things that Wrexham stands for. And as I mentioned, that is what Mickey Thomas was at the centre of.
I'm quite sad to leave Mickey Thomas, if I'm quite honest with you, but I guess we do have to move on to your final position. So, you know, we come to sort of the sharp end of your choices. You know, we come to your striker, and then, you know, a lot of the times this is where, you know, the cult figures, you know, are predominantly found. Obviously not always, but, you know, predominantly found, the goal scorers or the big number nine, or, you know, whoever it is. So again, in terms of selecting a striker, was it easy? Was it difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I think of all the positions, this was one of the hardest ones. I think, I mean, statistically, Tommy Bamford, who we had in the sort of, I mean, this is like the 30s, I think. He's our top scorer. But, you know, in terms of footage and sort of record and stuff, I can't really, with any sort of, you know, justification behind me, as a 23-year-old, say, oh, he's the person I'm going to pick. So basing it off what I've seen, I mean, there were a number of names I could have put in there. If you're going off a cult hero, it would probably be Juan Ugarte, who was a Spanish striker we had in the mid-2000s, who he was quite injury prone, but he scored 5 against Hartlepool in a league game. He was very influential when we won what was then the LDV Vans trophy in 2005. Also Andy Morrell, who got us up in 2003, and then went to Coventry, and then he came back at the start of the 2010s as a player manager. He got us to the playoff final. We unfortunately lost to Newport. We won the FA trophy in 2013 against Grimsby. He was very influential, was someone I was considering. Also, Carl Connolly, who we had for most of the 90s. But in the end, it boiled down to, I had to choose the man that, you know, Wrexham fans often call Psycho, which is Gary Bennett, who is somebody that was quite renowned for his style of play. He was quite direct. Again, he was a tenacious sort of player. I mean, we signed him from Chester, which, for those who aren't particularly well-versed in the kind of, you know, Northeast Wales, Northwest England sort of rhetoric, is not the sort of thing you do. I mean, we have a very big rivalry with Chester. And when he came, it was almost, in more recent years, it's become quite normal for, you know, players to go between the two of us. A few of our players we've got now have played for Chester throughout their careers, and we kind of forget about it rather conveniently. But when Gary Bennett came in the sort of, I think it was 1991, 1992, he was almost not ostracized, but there was a bit of a skepticism around, you know, this is someone that's come from the enemy. I mean, Chester's only sort of 14, 15 miles down the road. It's, as I say, it's a very big local derby. And it was seen as almost, you know, why have we signed this guy? And quickly, you know, he turned out to be a phenomenal player. He scored over 100 times for us in 170, 180 odd games. And as I say, he's somebody that really, he played with his heart on his sleeve again, which, you know, as a sort of player that you want to put on a pedestal, on a mountain, carved into the rock, is somebody you want to go with. I mean, one thing I've always found quite funny is when he played for us, throughout the time he was at the club, he was always referred to as a Chester reject, even when, as I say, he's scoring 20, 30 goals a season. And yeah, as I say, there were many options for the striking position, but in the end, I had to go with Gary Bennett.
I think that's probably the most passionate one so far, Gary. I think you know, like you say, you can hear it, and you can hear it in the voice when there's a real affinity between player and guest.
Ain't they just? I mean, I have to confess, Gary Bennett wasn't somebody I knew a great deal about. I vaguely knew the name, but that was about it. But you know, there again, we look at other alternatives. You know, that James could have gone with, and the players like Dele Adebola, Dixie McNeil mentioned earlier, Billy Ashcroft, and Bobby Shinton, who used to play for Walsall. Actually, once shared a treatment room at Walsall Football Club with Bobby Shinton many, many years ago. Wyn Davies and Jonathan Walters. But when I looked at the details of Gary Bennett, he went to Wrexham and he scored 16 goals in the promotion year, and then scored 39 league goals and then 47 the following season. Now, that, I mean, you know, if that don't earn you a place on Mount Rushmore for a club like Wrexham, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do to get on there. So, fantastic choice, James. And as soon as I read into a little bit about the guy, I thought, well, yeah, that'll do for me. That'll do for me.
Again, I suppose, Steve, it's, obviously the goals are the currency of strikers, but sometimes, you know, as we've said, it's about the connect with the fans. It can be a playing style, it can be a way of playing it. You know, obviously goals help, but sometimes it's not all, I mean, this is going to sound really strange, but it's not always about the goals. So just sometimes a player or a striker can have that affinity through everything else that they sort of portray on the pitch.
Yeah, it's all to do with the effort. It's that feeling that a player is somehow taking part of your support onto the pitch. That's what it comes across as for me. You know, they are the players that make the cult heroes, that you kind of see something of yourself in them, you know. So that's what it comes down to. And Gary Bennett is a, you know, the perfect pick for this. You know, he was the pantomime villain. You know, he was, you know, he did cross one of the, and it is one of the great divides in you know, in what is English and Welsh football. You know, that is a volatile mix when Wrexham and Chester get together. So for to have played on both sides of that divide and be a legend for both sides as well of that divide. You know, I remember him from like 87 when he was involved in a, you know, a really, you know, huge incident with Sheffield Wednesday. You know, he missed time challenge when he was younger, that effectively ended the career of a Sheffield Wednesday player by the name of, oh, it's going to escape me now, Ian Knight, I think. Some saying he's called Ian Knight. And it was huge at the time. It was like front page headlines because it was a televised cup replay that was going to be on like Sports Night or something, and it was a big thing. So in this respect, to overcome that as well, to be, you know, he was painted as such a villain back then, to survive that and to kind of come back and then prosper in football is a big thing. You know, that would have been such an easy way out in a way for a player to be, you know, the aggressor in a challenge like that, that made such an impact on another player's career. It would have been very easy to shy away from the rest of football and just to sink into the margins. And he didn't, you know, he came back on a local level. He came back because I'm sure he played for Tranmere as well. Could be wrong about that. But, you know, he was such a big character. and to score the number of goals he did as well. You know, he was an incredible character and a credible player for the levels that he played at. And you know, James could have gone down many different routes. There were other players that could have ticked the boxes here. You know, Gary's already mentioned him. Billy Ashcroft was massive for Wrexham, absolutely massive. Went on to play for Middlesbrough, went and played in the Netherlands. I've spoken to Billy Ashcroft before, and he is a fantastic personality, a really lovely man that did great things for Wrexham. He's part of that side that made the quarterfinals of the UEFA, the Cup Winners' Cup against Anderlecht in 75-76. There were others, you know, you got to realise, you know, players like Lee Jones, who tends to go forgotten. He was a Liverpool reserve, never quite made it, and he, you know, served Wrexham very, very well. Jim Steele, Steve Watkin, you know, there were plenty of other alternatives, but, you know, Gary Bennett, I think, is the right choice here. You know, for the fact that everything he overcome, you know, that incident with Ian Knight and that concept of crossing the divide and having to do that as well, going from Chester to Wrexham, you know, to have so much to prove. You know, what he had to prove to himself, but also, you know, is the new club that he'd signed for and the supporters that would be massively sceptical. You know, going from at that time, and probably still now, there's you know, the players who swap and change between the two, but, you know, going from Chester to Wrexham, this is as volatile as Sol Campbell going from Spurs to Arsenal. This is Nick Barmby going from Everton to Liverpool. You know, it is that, you know, it's Luis Figo going from Barcelona to Real Madrid. You know, this is, you know, what that type of transfer will engender. You can't downplay just what this will have done.
It's, well, there you go, Jim. Not that validation was needed, but I guess validation there for your final choice of striker. Obviously, it's funny because you've kind of almost preempted the sort of like the final question. But always, you know, when we've done this, you know, there's four names, you know, that have been spoken about passionately, and that's, you know, we always sort of ask the final question of, you know, if you had to sum up, you know, sort of Mr. Wrexham, if you like, you know, which of your players, which of your four, for you, absolutely embodies your club, your ethos as a Wrexham fan, or embodies what you look for in your players as a Wrexham fan. Which of those four that you've picked would you choose?
Can you guess?
I think so. Yeah, I think this one might be easier.
Yeah, I can't look past Joey Jones. Just as I said, for what he did for the club in terms of both on and off the pitch, and just someone that not only is he a cult hero for the way that he played the game, but he was also extremely good when he played for us. And, you know, to come back twice, like you said, it's just, you can't look beyond him for me. It has to be. If you were to describe a Mr. Wrexham, it would have to be Joey Jones.
Brilliant. Perfect, perfect. Gary, I suppose, you know, to sort of to sum up, you're the one who's going to have to go to the racecourse ground and do the work here. Again, you know, we're right bang on the hour mark. You know, we've spent an hour, and again, this is no disrespect, we've spent an hour chatting about four Wrexham players, which, when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, would probably be quite difficult, but actually was incredibly easy.
It was, and, you know, as I said earlier, it almost doesn't matter whether you're a fan of Barcelona, Liverpool, Accrington, Stanley, Wrexham, Dulwich Hamlet. It doesn't matter. They're your club. And the players who represent your club are your heroes. And the players that give of their best for your club are the players who become heroes. And Joey Jones is a fantastic example. And, you know, it was probably the least surprising thing tonight that James picked Joey Jones as Mr. Wrexham. you know, and more power to him, because, you know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, the whole sort of concept of this series was about. It's not the best players. It's not who's going to score the most goals. It's not, I mean, it might be the flair players occasionally, but it's who represents your club. Who do you think is the heart and soul of your club? Who do you sort of, would you put in that Mr. Wrexham or Mr. whoever, whichever club it is? And, you know, Joey Jones slot right in there perfectly. So great choice, James. Great choice. and I'm going to unpack my tools. I've got to get them out of the wrapper because they're brand new. I've got this brand new one for Wrexham, so I should be travelling across to Wales. I should be quarantined.
I'm fine.
I can quarantine a little hut on the mountain while I sort of chisel away. I've got three Kit Kats and a bottle of milk, so I won't go hungry for the 2 weeks. And then I'll be flying back home.
That should sort you out. Stephen, it's been a great... It's almost been a cult episode, I think. You know, as much as cult choices, this has actually probably become quite a cult episode in itself.
Oh, definitely. As soon as this was floated as being done, you know, this was one that I was massively looking forward to doing, and it certainly hasn't let me down.
James, have you enjoyed it? Has it helped with reminiscing about Wrexham Football Club? Obviously not quite in the best of times at the moment, but was it an hour where you could maybe forget your cares and your worries as a Wrexham fan?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the amount of times that, as I say, especially at uni, I'd, you know, it's the standard sort of, oh, you know, hello, nice to meet you, who do you support? I support Wrexham, who are they? And it's quite nice to just, rather than have to explain to people, I mean, I've explained to people before I'm from North Wales and they think I'm from Cardiff, so it's quite nice to be able to talk for an hour about Wrexham and just, you know, just wax lyrical basically about four players that to our fan base are, as I say, extremely kind of iconic and are four real cult heroes.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, all that's left for me, you know, is to say thank you, Gary, your brainchild as always, you know, your idea, this one. Happy?
Delighted, mate, and James has done Wrexham proud.
Stephen, quite close to home, this one. I've learned a little bit about my geography tonight, my UK geography. I didn't realise it was quite as close as it was.
Yeah, no, we're not that far away. You know, I'd say I've done that trip over the Runcorn Bridge, you know, many a time, and it is, it's great. As soon, you know, you see that signpost for Wales and how the police become headloo and stuff like that, and it's just absolutely outstanding. So you pick up the terminology and all sorts. It's an absolute, yeah, our Welsh cousins across the water. Yeah, I'm always happy for this type of thing.
I can't believe you're fluent in Welsh, and it's taken us 2 years to realise that you're fluent. I can't wait to get you to say some more stuff. James, obviously, you know, thank you ever so much for coming on and being a fantastic guest.
No, no worries. I always enjoy talking about Wrexham, so I've loved it as always.
That is a sentence I didn't expect to hear very often. But now it's on here, I like it. All that's left for me to say, obviously, is to everyone, thanks for watching, and please join us again on the next episode of Mount Rushmore. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.